Good afternoon. Greetings from beautiful downtown Occidental, California. I'm John Sumter, and this is the HR Examiner Radio Show. Today, we are lucky enough to have Bill Kudyk, the impresario behind all of the magic that is the HR Tech Annual Conference. Bill has been a standing figure in HR technology since before Lars Perkins invented the applicant tracking system. And he's a veritable fount of wisdom about how the market works, what customers want, and what's coming down the pike. So how you doing, Bill?
I'm great. Pleasure to be here. I love being a guest on radio shows after being the host of so many myself because I get to talk more.
Well, that's great. That's right. And so I'm hardly going to say anything, but
no,
why don't you just fill in the blanks for the probably very few people in the audience who actually have never heard of you?
Oh, so, me. For 24 years I've been maintaining an industry analyst level of knowledge about vendors and their products in all areas of IT affecting HR. But recruiting has always been my favorite function because I was present at the birth of applicant tracking systems, as you mentioned, with Lars Perkins and also with Steve Leung, a South Korean and former CIA contractor who invented Resumex in 1988, which is when Lars did it. So that's always been one of my favorites. And I sell this knowledge in various ways, and one of the ways I do that is with the HR Technology Conference, which I'm the founding co-chair of. It's now in its 16th year and pretty much acclaimed by everybody as the best, you know, large-scale conference in HR, and not just for techies at all, but really for everyone in HR because technology has crept, certainly recruiters know this, but every generalist knows this, every, you know, VP, domain expert in charge of benefits or compensation or whatever knows this. Technology has crept into every corner of HR, and if you don't understand it, if you don't know how to get business value out of it, you know, your career is not going to go where you want it to go. You're not going to be successful, either personally or for the company you work for. And as I wrote once, you know, you're going to be dumped into a trash bin. So,
I really think so.
Unless you,
who's in there with us?
Yeah, I mean, unless you specialize in sexual harassment training or lawsuits, I mean, you got to know about technology to be in HR these days. And as a result, we really sort of position the show rather successfully as being for everyone in HR now, which, you know, wasn't our positioning 10, 12 years ago, but it is our positioning now. And I really think that our success is, you know, certainly due somewhat to the smart things we've done, but more to the fact of how the HR function has evolved. And how what I've just been saying, you know, is becoming more and more true, and more people have come to realize it, and they come to the show as the best place to learn. I mean, China Gorman, the former COO of SHRM, said, short of getting another graduate degree, this is the best place to go to learn about getting the business benefits out of technology for HR. So I think it's
great. I understand you're going to offer the audience a discount. Why don't you tell them about that?
Well, the discount is actually because of you, John. I mean, what no one on this call knows is that you and I were involved in the show I did before HR Technology. It was called HRMS Expo 97, when I put together a panel on internet recruiting. Remember now, this is 1997. And I realized I didn't know anything about internet recruiting. And it took all of a half hour to figure out that you were one of the guys who did, although at the time your specialty tended to be job boards more than the ATS end of it. And you spent an hour and a half with me on the phone explaining the whole thing. I figured it out. I was able to put the panel together. And subsequently, you know, there were all these ATS guys, and there were a lot of them, in 1997 who were trying to figure out how to connect themselves with the job boards. You know, there was no eQuest in those days or any of the other companies that, you know, help you post to job boards. And, you know, I introduced a lot of them to you, and you helped them figure that all out. So that was amazing. I can't remember what your question was now, John. What did you ask?
Yeah, so the discount. Tell people how this is about.
Oh, the discount.
Tell people how to save money.
Exactly. Well, the discount is really because of our long acquaintanceship, which is now 17 years. And
I was barely out of high school when I first got to that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You keep talking like we're not close in age. I really find that amusing. The discount is for any of your listeners or your readers to get $500 off our rack rate, which is $18.95. So they would pay $13.95 instead. And very easy, the way they get that is when they are registering online and they get to the box or the data field called promo code, they type in your name, Sumser, all caps, followed by the number 13. So SUMSER13. And we have this horrible old German software that acts in totally weird ways. And people who watch it grind away always think they're not getting the discount that they've been promised. But if you just hold on till the end, you'll see you've been charged $13.95 and not $18.95, and you'll know that you've succeeded. And you know, I'm happy to make that available to you in honor and memory of our long friendship.
Great. So recently, I don't know that the audience knows this. You have been writing for about forever a monthly column in HR Executive Magazine, and in your last column, you wrote about the new war gathering over recruiting technology. Tell me the thesis there.
Actually, yeah, absolutely right. I have been writing. I've been the HR tech columnist for Human Resource Executive Magazine since 1990. So if you count that as the first year, this is my 24th year of doing it. Now I tend to be available at HREonline.com. If you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll find my bearded face, and you can also click on more, because I think that column was three columns ago, and find the column you're talking about. My point very simply was that Taleo, Brass Ring, PeopleClick, Virtual Edge, all the leaders of the previous generation, and they all came out around the same time, 1998, 2000, when a modern applicant tracking system was just considered the gift from heaven by most recruiters, because it organized their paperwork, it organized their workflow, it kept their chart of requisitions and their chart of candidates all horribly well ordered. And it made their job easier. I mean, some of the systems maybe were a little clunky and hard to use, but certainly was a lot better than 3x5 cards or you know, big sheets of paper or whatever they were using. And the point was that, you know, all those systems got bought by somebody else. Taleo got bought by Oracle, and Brass Ring got bought by Conexa, and PeopleClick by a company now called PeopleFluent, once called Authoria, and Virtual Edge by ADP. And in some cases, more than others, those companies invested in modernizing these applications as time went on. In other cases, not much money was spent. But now we find ourselves in the year 2013 recognizing that the center of value for recruiters and for HR and for their corporations, the center of value has shifted quite far away from the ATS, and that just like the HRMS, the Human Resource Management System, the basic software system that HR departments use, that it's largely an administrative back end, which you gotta have unless you want to go back to 3x5 cards, but it ain't providing the real value, and certainly not the competitive discriminator to get the very best candidates. that you imagined it once did. It's simply sort of keeping track in a good and orderly fashion, and, you know, you need OFCCP compliance and all that stuff, and compliance is an incredibly important part of all HR systems. But in terms of value, it ain't there. And the value, perceived by most people now, is in the so-called edge applications.
So what
and
are
you
they?
Probably,
what are they?
You, yeah, well, I was going to say, you probably have a better list of those than I do. I often rely on the redoubtable Elaine Orler. And do you love her as much as I do, or do you just simply like her?
I just simply like her. But she has done a yeoman's job of organizing her end of the world.
She really has.
So tell me what the edge applications are, sort of in general, because I'm not as clear that that's the future. I think I see a whole lot of toys in search of a problem to solve rather than things that solve problems.
Sure. Well, the fact that it's even considered an edge application is ridiculous. But the various forms of sourcing, okay? We all know the very best way to source is through employee referrals, if not, you know, internal mobility, you know, hiring someone who works for you already for a new job. Those are the two biggest sources of hiring. But the other sourcing functions besides referrals are obviously LinkedIn is enormous right now. And web crawlers and Indeed and things of that sort. Let me quickly tell you an anecdote from Lars Perkins, who invented more or less the ATS in 1988.
Okay.
Incredibly prescient guy who was not a really great manager. Okay, and the proof of his prescience is that he invented, after he left the HR world and the ATS world, he invented Picasa, the photo organizing application, which he sold, and, you know, other ones may be better now, but it was the first and best at the time, which he sold to Google, which kept him on as a vice president for 5 years, not known for employing stupid people. And, you know, I think he just had so much money after 5 years that he left. Anyway, 20 years ago, 1993, I know I wasn't aware the internet existed in 1993. You know, this was before Mosaic, way before Netscape. You know, maybe you knew there was an internet. I mean, the guys in the Defense Department and in some scientific labs had, you know, DARPANET, which was the precursor, so they knew, but I didn't know. And one day I'm talking to him, and he says, Bill, imagine, and I don't know how, just imagine in 20 years, this was 20 years ago, just imagine a day when everyone's resume is just out there. I have no idea how. It's just out there. And imagine how that changes recruiting from your being a schmuck in a boat with a baited hook over the side trying to attract a fish to being a scuba diver with a spear gun hunting down your fish, and how it changes recruiting from attraction, selection, and hiring to searching, selling, and hiring. And, John, tell me, isn't that exactly where we are 20 years after he said that?
Oh, you know, there's a lot of puffery there. The truth is, Bill, that 80% of all jobs are filled by people who actively apply for them. And so the scuba diving form of recruiting is an extremely expensive approach to bringing people on board. And so it's reserved for the 15 or 20% of the organization that are in critical sort of slots. But
sure, executive headhunter.
But not much is really, you know, if you say, okay, now we have tools that make it possible for companies to do what executive search firms have done, then the question is, where do you find the people who are going to do that? Because the existing recruiting crowd is generally better at processing stuff that comes in over the transom because people want to work there. And frankly, you're better off hiring somebody who wants to work for you than somebody you have to persuade to get on board. The motivational structure is all upside down when you when you have to go out and spear the fish, when the fish comes and jumps on your plate, it's a much better meal.
It's a lot better, sure. How about, John, that we round up all those old-style recruiters and march them around the desert for 40 years?
Well, the problem is recruiting is one of the few places where there actually is a career lifespan of 3 years. So there's no upward mobility for a recruiter. If you get good at recruiting, you're stuck. So recruiters turn over really fast. There's no training for new recruiters. There's no organization that trains and certifies them. There are no really interesting training operations. So the people who have 20-year-old views of recruiting are just the new people. And guess what? They don't become the old people very often. They mostly end their term as recruiters as the new people. So you get this great new technology, and from my perspective, it's generally a toy in search of a problem to solve with a very limited universe of people who have the capacity to actually utilize the stuff. Right?
I would agree with you.
Training gap.
Sure. I agree with you on one essential point. For years, I ran panels at their user conferences for all the older products that I mentioned, and I went out of my way at every single one of those panels, and of course, who's there but in the trench recruiters, right? And
right.
The guys who use the software, not the guys who sign the contract or even the people who write the checks, but the people who actually use it. And I would always ask, who in this room has time to do anything but work on the wreck on his desk? And I think in 10 panels, one hand went up, right?
Right.
And that was at a time when some gurus were saying, oh, you have to do proactive recruiting. You have to know what your company is going to need in 6 months, so you'll have a talent pool of people, and you're not starting from square one every time a new rec hits your desk. Well, the fact is, they're not given the time for that. Now, you probably know this better than I do. I mean, how successful have companies been who split recruiting into the sourcers and the recruiters? I mean, is that a structure that works better?
So I'm going to get to that, but I'm going to take a moment to remind you that we're listening to the HR Examiner radio show. I'm John Sumser. My guest today is the venerable Bill Kudyk, and I want to let you know that there are too many sites and too little time. The problem we all face in today's technology recruiting landscape is so many sites to search, but too little time. Our friends at Dice.com have a solution. Dice's new open web search tool streamlines the process. It gathers info from 50 different social sites, such as Facebook, Google+, GitHub, and creates one super profile for each tech professional. Save time searching through unqualified clutter at dice.com/openweb. More efficient searches. Learn more at dice.com/openweb. So your question was, does it make sense to split recruiting into sort of a sales function and a research function, sourcing and recruiting?
Right.
And the answer is there is an extraordinary proliferation of communications channels going on. I'm less sure that automated scraping of data gives you anything interesting. That's not clear to me yet. But I am sure that when we started this, you and I, there were two or three channels you could communicate in, and one of them was the local newspaper. Today, there are probably 40,000, and 2 or 3 years from now, there's going to be 500,000 different channels that are worth communicating down. And the greatest companies, you know, the Pepsis and the General Electrics and the Walmarts, are going to have outreach efforts in a lot of those things. A whole lot of companies are going to have to get better at choosing what they don't use and understanding why they made that decision and doing enough surveillance to keep the option open should it become useful. And that's really going to be the structure of the sourcing department. It's a research optimization function, because there will be so many ways to look at the problem and communicate out to the universe of potential candidates that nobody's going to be able to keep track of it.
Right, and I left off my thought about what Lars said, which is, yes, everyone's resume is out there now, but they're in locked pens at LinkedIn and at Dice and at other places where you have to do something to get them. And my notion was the same as yours, and I was just simply asking if you know anybody today, which is a sourcing department full of guys who and women who are incredibly facile at working all those channels and finding people and never ever talking to them, right? And simply delivering them
up.
There's
a pretty sophisticated universe there. The folks who put on the ERE show have a highly successful, highly profitable events business called SourceCon.
Yes,
at SourceCon you see 400 or 500 people who are doing what you describe, who set them up so that the pro golfers can hit the ball. It's probably, I'll probably offend some listeners, but with the analogy, but it's going on. It's going on because what it takes to do great research and what it takes to do great sales are almost mutually exclusive.
Exactly
skill and
right.
Personality sets, right?
And how many people have both, right? You know how many
you
people?
And I, but the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes, you and I, but how many people willing to work for a corporate wage combine great research skills and great selling skills? It just doesn't happen that often.
So there are some. There's some amazing people out there. I don't know if you've ever run across Jeremy Langens, who I think is at Expedia maybe today. He's been around all the Seattle companies. In Seattle, if you want to see where the state-of-the-art of recruiting is, it's in Seattle. And that community produces people who do both.
Who do both. Well, that's
who do
that's
do both and are therefore equipped to manage both.
Right.
So they're building a leadership stockpile in Seattle with people who have spent time at Starbucks and Amazon and Microsoft and Boeing and the various subsets of those ecosystems, doing the kind of recruiting you need to do. You know, that tech market has exploded like nobody's business. So if you want to build a tech business in Seattle, you either have to steal the people or import them.
Well, what you're saying is that Seattle's become exactly like Silicon Valley, where they'll cut your throat for an A-plus software engineer. And
that's right. So finding them becomes the sport. Right? And it looks like, one of the things that's very interesting is it looks like the more automated the tools get for finding people, the more that people who have those highly sought skill sets opt out of those systems because LinkedIn is a spam machine, and if you are highly desirable, it's impossible to get anything done on LinkedIn. So people bail because LinkedIn is so good at what it does, it chases away the people who are the most desirable.
And I think you're right, and I certainly know that in Silicon Valley, the A-plus software engineers have the vaguest possible resumes on LinkedIn,
right,
that give no evidence of how good they are. But, you know, they just want to have a LinkedIn presence in case someone who they know has forgotten their email address so they can in-mail them, right? But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so that suggests to me that we're in the middle of a pretty interesting time where the things that look like landmarks today, Facebook, LinkedIn, some of the bigger social communities, are moments away from appearing like AOL and CompuServe.
That's
the order of things, right?
Yeah. I've never been convinced that Facebook would be a decent recruiting tool. Either, you know, a company putting a page up about itself and its jobs, or people searching or whatever. The only thing that I find useful is, and there are so many vendors doing this right now, referral, and most of them have copied JobVite, are, you know, sending a referral to an employee, having permission to search all his social connections on LinkedIn and Facebook and Tumblr, or whatever else he might be involved in, or Google Plus, and the system trying to find, and emphasis on trying to find a good match among all his connections to the open rec, to the job. And then not just asking the person, please refer someone for this job, but suggesting 5 or 10 of his connections, and you know, he'll probably only know half, right, of the connections that are surfaced, to, you know, send out a note and suggest that they apply. And, you know, I think that that's effective social recruiting. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, so the numbers that I see fairly routinely are that somewhere between 65% and 75% of employees are unwilling and uninterested in suggesting that their friends and colleagues actually come to work in the company.
Really? I've never seen numbers like that. Even when there's a $5,000 bonus attached?
So
they don't want to sell their friends?
There aren't many $5,000 bonuses, but
okay.
But the truth is, referrals, when referrals work, and referrals can be a very useful thing, they do two things. They get you more of the same kind of people you have, and if
correct.
That's what you want, you need to do referrals. Many companies are trying to continuously improve their stock, and so getting more of the same is not very interesting. The second
right.
thing that makes referrals work is if you need a job, and I work at a company where you'd be good, and I refer you into the job, that
right.
triangle of obligation where I bet my reputation with my boss, you bet your reputation with me, means that you're going to outperform anybody else in the job. And so when referrals work like that, it's my idea, I do you a solid, and you have to perform as a result of that. That's when referrals sing. But the mechanism that you described, which is scavenging my Rolodex to find people who might fit, which means I'm selling you on the job, you're not selling me on your need for the job.
Right.
That's
right,
not
right,
the kind of referral that works. The dynamics get all inverted.
Let me take a moment, John, to tell everyone, if they want to see you humiliate me in public, as well as you have on this radio show, that you're going to be in the Tuesday morning general session called the HR Tonight Show, starring Bill Cudick. And if they go to the HRTechConference.com site, they can register using your own source code. You're making it cheaper for them to come and see me humiliated. I mean, I think that was so smart of you. And use SUMSER13, all caps, and they'll be able to witness it live and unrehearsed, much as this
is live and unrehearsed. So I don't know about humiliation, but I certainly do love a vibrant conversation, and it's been really great to have you here. If you're listening and you didn't pick up on the fact that I'm going to be at the HR Tech Conference in Las Vegas on Tuesday morning on Bill's special swan song farewell Tonight Show modeled talk time, you're in for a treat. I believe I'll be the one who's getting humiliated, and I'm looking forward to that.
October 7 through 9 in Las Vegas, Mandalay Bay. Not the absolute best hotel in Vegas, but perfectly fine and not so expensive because, you know, they got so much competition in Vegas. They got 20,000 hotel rooms.
And it's a great place to learn everything you need to know about HR Tech. So Bill, thanks for taking the time to stop by this morning. And I want to close by reminding everybody that you're listening to HR Examiner Radio. This has been John Sumser with Bill Cudick. And you can discover undiscoverable candidates. Social recruiting is critical to finding not only good candidates, but the right candidates for your technology positions. Discover undiscoverable candidates with Dice.com's new open web search tool. It gives you a clear picture of tech professionals' lives online so you can find the best fit. Find the right tech candidates at dice.com/openweb. Thanks again, Bill. It was great to have you on board.
A pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye now. Are we still here?